I think you just have to be familiar with everything you find on that page, bottom two, page 291, and top, you know, all 292 pretty much. Did we correct that one error on page 291 on the paradigm? Well, that, we don't have to worry about that. We're for Tasso there, but there was a... Yeah. There was a transposition of some letters. For you, you, all you have to worry about is Luol anyway, so I guess we want to make sure. Yeah, but to settle a question, you do need to be familiar with the act, the infinitives and the participles for perfect, as well as the finite forms. But as far as the participles go, the only one I would give you would be the dictionary form. In other words, masculine, singular form of it. I assume you know the rest of it. Okay. Well, I think we'll continue translating today. We'll do some quick review tomorrow for the quiz. So be prepared for that. But we left off around verse 27, 28, 27. It was your turn. Okay, you can remember as well. Yeah. Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Okay. Okay, good. Good. Fine. They just copied it from the Septuagint, yeah. Yeah. Okay. But it's a good translation because the Hebrew construction was pretty much the same thing. Okay. Yeah, go ahead and do verse 27 then. It was 27 that you were about to do, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
O Okitomu Estomenu, you do I need, and so Akio Sina, you go Aku Ton Samanta to Hippodemus.
Okay.
And the one coming out to me. I didn't really get the clue there, but I am not worthy.
Mm-hmm.
In order to lose the laces of the sandals of him, or his, the laces of his sandals.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. The who there that you were wondering about is a genitive form of the relative pronoun. So it's of whom.
Okay.
I am not able to or worthy to loose the sandals, loose his sandals, and so forth. It's kind of a redundancy or a resumptive. This sounds a little bit like Hebrew too, but the out to there is his, and then you have of whom. So it gets a little bit awkward in English. It's almost like you're repeating it. Of whom I'm not worthy to loose the sandals of him. You know, his sandals. So it's a little bit awkward to translate in English, but that's the idea there, that who is a relative pronoun. Okay, good. Any other questions besides that? Notice the hina luso. We've got the hina clause with subjunctive luso. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what else could I make? Yeah, it's a subjunctive for sure. Any other questions? 28 then, Eric.
Santa in Bethania, Genito, Pera, Giordano, Grupo, and Moriano.
Okay.
These things in Bethania happen or came to be.
Right, good. Mm-hmm.
Around the proximity of Jordan.
Yeah, or the other side of Jordan. Yeah. I don't think we had that. That's not a very common one, so I don't think we had that one listed.
The other side of
Jordan. Yeah. Across or other side of. Okay.
Where John was baptizing.
Yes, where John was baptizing. Okay. Notice this progressive construction here, ein plus the participle gives you that real strong progressive aspect, where John was baptizing. Okay, and you?
So you're saying that
Yeah, it would be analyzed as a circumstantial participle, and then having the verb to be with it also gives you that real definite progressive aspect. In fact, if you just took the ain out, hupo ho Ioannes baptizo, and you know, you still have John baptizing, but put the ain in there and you get a even more emphatic progressive aspect. Question?
Replacement of John.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking that that's how it should be for yes or no.
You mean word order?
Yeah, I was thinking of it between the article and the article. Should it have the article?
Oh, no, that article is for John. That's the article for Ho Ioannes.
Oh,
yeah, it's and then there's no article on the participle. Yeah. You'll see proper names sometimes with the article, sometimes without. You'll see Ho Paulos, you know. And so sometimes if just slight difference in emphasis, I suppose. The proper name is considered definite even without the article. But very often they'll have the article as well. We'll get into the article here pretty soon. It'll be one of the first things we'll discuss in more detail. Okay, verse 29. Glenn, I guess you're next. Okay. Eparion is tomorrow or on the morrow. To see te eparion is tomorrow.
Oh.
To the morrow or whatever.
To the tomorrow.
Yeah.
The next day. Sees Jesus coming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jesus coming.
Mm-hmm.
Toward him.
Right.
And says.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he sees Jesus coming toward him and says,
right.
See the Lamb of God, the one,
It means to lift up, literally, lifting up.
Like an air or something?
Yeah, kind of, to lift up, lifting him off, lifting a burden off, you know.
The one, Iron is a, participle.
Yeah.
So it's like
the one lifting up, or
the lifting up one.
Mm-hmm.
The sin of the world.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So the lifting up one of the sins of the world, or the one lifting up the sins of the world. So that's quite a graphic picture, you know. Instead, the King James says taking away is the one that taketh away the sins of the world, but that is lifted up and off you to take the burden off. Really interesting. Okay, good. Notice ida there, see. That's generally considered an equivalent to the Hebrew hine, behold.
Is that imperative?
Imperative, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's imperative. It's from idain. Well, idain is your infinitive form. And
is that the horao?
Yeah, I think it's from horao. I'm just going to double check it. See, blepo, you have blepo and you have horao. This should be from horao. They don't list it here. But it should be an imperative form from horao. And then your infinitive is idain. You get a different root for some of the forms on that verb. Okay. Verse 30 then, unless there's any other questions on verse 29. Okay, as we're translating, I think, you know, part of the reason to do all of this is to be able to recognize various constructions that we run across and you know, and seeing how frequently participles, for example, are used, far more frequently than in English, and the relationship between verb forms and so forth. So this is what we're attempting to do. Tony, do you want to take verse 30?
Ego icon opisto mu ercitai aner hos emprosen mu egonen poti protos mu ein.
Okay, good.
This one is over.
Yeah, over is okay, but it's you may have to go for a resultant meaning on this one. Over can mean concerning or about which and so forth. In other words, it's the one over whom I've said, that kind of thing. So we might translate. I like to keep them literal, but this is the one concerning whom I said, something of that nature.
Okay,
That ooh there is not an ooh, it's a who.
Oh.
Okay, which means it's a genitive form of the relative pronoun. So this one is over whom I said. And so you almost have to put, this is the one over whom I'm said. And ego apon. And of course, apon would be enough to get the said I said from it, but the ego, this is the one whom I said. There's a little bit more emphasis on the I here. Okay, and then opiso starts to the thing he said.
After me is coming a man,
mm-hmm.
who
in person means in front of.
Oh. Who is after me is coming a man. Who before me?
Okay, the gegon in here is a perfect form of ginomai.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. Yeah. It's a little bit hard to find a simple way to translate that. They translate the Lunar Linear uses has come to be, something like that, but it's has come to be in front of me. In other words, after me is coming. Or behind me is coming a male, is coming someone, a man who has come to be in front of me. It's kind of an interesting relationship. In other words, you're looking from a kind of an eternal perspective here. And then the last clause kind of explains that.
Yeah, which before
me. Okay, or was, ain. Yeah, because first of me he was, literally is what it says. Protos, it's not pro, it's not the preposition, this is protos, which is the number for one. So first of me, the ordinal. So because first of me he was. And of course Trinitarians always take this as pre-existence. But this is just alluding back to the Logos in John 1 and the fact that in the mind of God he was first, he was the foremost. So that's why it says first of me he was. And first has got more of a connotation of position than it does of time even. Okay, so Huto, this is the one over whom or concerning whom I said, behind me is coming, that's the present for Miracle Mai, is coming a man who has come to be in front of me, or who has become in front of me, I suppose you could say, who has become in front of me. In other words, the idea is that he hasn't always been in that position, but now he's coming into that position. Because first of me he was, which he was... been before me in the sense of the preeminence and the plan of God and so forth. Okay, any other questions there, Glenn?
I looked up Hide, and
yeah.
It's the imperative of Adon from Morocco.
Okay, right.
It's the imperative of the aorist, I guess?
Yeah, it would be an aorist imperative then. And then from Adon, right. And then the infinitive of that is Idain. Mm-hmm. So, good, okay. 31. Who's up next, Mark?
Kago uk edain alton al hina fane rothe to Israel yan tuto elzon ego en hudati baptizon.
Good. Okay.
And I think that I did not know him.
Mm-hmm.
But in order that he should be manifested
mm-hmm.
to Israel, on this account I came baptizing in water.
Okay. Okay. Good. And I did not know him. That Adain is a pluperfect form. Remember from Oida. And so I had not known him. or I did not know him. It's actually a pluperfect form, but we get pretty much a past meaning out of it, an aorist meaning out of it. So I had not known him or did not know him, but, strong contrast here, in order that he might be manifested to Israel, through this came I in water, baptizing in water, for this reason, diatuto is for this reason, so forth. For this reason I came baptizing through this. Okay, notice dia was the accusative there. It gives, you that sense of because of, for this cause, that type of thing. Okay. And the word order is a little choppy here for English, you know, the way it's being worded, so you get a little bit stilted as far as your translation, unless you try to smooth that out, reword it, and then it's not going to be quite as literal. Okay, verse 32 then, Dale, any other questions on this? Okay, that, notice what that kago is, don't you? Kai, ego, so just a contraction. It's a pretty common one. Okay, Dale, verse 32.
Kai Amar tu risen Iwane Legon Hoti Tepe Mai tu Numa Katavino Host Peristuran Ex Urenu Kai Remainen Ep Alton.
Okay, good.
And witnessing or confessing?
Yes, yeah. Confessing, witnessing, that'd be fine. But it's the aorist form here, so so your subject is Ioannes, and John witnessed.
And John witnessed saying about him.
Mm-hmm. Well, saying, consider this whole T is like a quotation. Saying that, and then quote, and then in effect quote.
Saying
John witnessed saying that. This is from Thaumadzo, and it's a perfect form, so. This is perfect from, you could probably translate it, I have viewed or have, I have seen, I have viewed, I have seen, I have watched, something like that.
Okay, I have watched the Spirit coming down,
Hos is as, or like.
Peristeran.
Yeah, it's a dove.
Oh.
You haven't had that one yet.
That's so. A dove out of heaven, and
just an aorist form from meno. To remain.
On him, or?
Yeah, and it remained upon him. Yeah, it remained upon Epi. Okay, good. That Tethe'amai is from, let me see, it's not from Thaumadzo, like I thought originally, it's Tethe'aomai. Tethe'aomai, so it's a contract deponent verb. And let's see, what else I had to make comment on here?
Oh, is
Tethe'aomai
the root form?
Yeah, Tethe'aomai is what you'd find it under. Theta-omai, theta, epsilon, alpha, omicron, mu, alpha, iota. And this te-theta-omai, that's a perfect form. So it's a deponent verb and it's a contract verb. Yes, Mark?
M-N-N, is that, would that be, is that an irregular aorist or is that imperfect?
It's, let me check, double check it here. It might be an imperfect. It's one of the two. It's first aorist. Yeah, so it's an irregular aorist from meno. Yeah, because remember, meno, when your stem ends in the nu, usually something strange is going to happen because you can't put the sigma on it. So it turns out to be. But admittedly, you have a point. Sometimes if you're not familiar with the verb and what it does, imperfect forms can sometimes, I mean, perfect forms can sometimes be confused with aorist because of that. But this is a first aorist. An irregular first aorist, you might call it. Okay, Bryce, do you have a question?
Do you say Legon is a Greek equivalent of Lamar Hebrew?
Yes. Yes. Legon is very, very much the same as the Hebrew Lamar saying.
Do you suppose it's probably a Hebrewism that they use because of their background?
It's hard to say for sure. It could be, but just only you could find out is to see if. is to see if the classical Greek used it also. I would be inclined to think it'd be more frequently used in the New Testament, you know, just because of the Hebrew background. And but it may be an idiom that was used among them also, at least, you know, but probably less frequently. It's used awful frequently in the New Testament.
If it had a form of Greek before, it might be more clear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you in Hebrew, you'll see some things where he said, saying, you know, and yeah. That's more of a Hebrew idiom. It's just he said this saying. This is a. I don't think you see that very often in the New Testament Greek. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Finally, is
participle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Katabaino from it's the present active participle, nominative or accusative. It could be nominative or accusative neuter. Okay, any other observations?
That would be an accusative due to the position that it's in over there.
Yes, because I saw, yeah, it'd be in its position as a direct object. And that has to be determined by the syntax, of course, because the forms would be the same for nominative.
What's the difference between the Aomai and Edo?
This one, I think they translate it in the interlinear, something like, as I was observing or watching, I viewed. I think it's got more of a progressive idea of watching something happen rather than just seeing it, just perceiving it and so forth. It's got more of the thing of looking at it happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems to be the tenor of it. Now I'd have to do a more thorough word study to be real dogmatic about it. The few times that I've seen it, it seems to have that kind of an idea. But of course, you'd have to do a. There's a lot of verbs to see in Greek, you know.
Yeah.
So there's blepo and horao and. And here, you know, and there's thumb. Well, that was to be amazed. This one, the Aomai. And so you have to kind of, there's slight nuances between the various words. Okay, 33 then, unless there's any other questions here.
Kago.
Okay, go ahead.
Eden, Alton, Alha, Stemsa, Ney, Batizin, and Hira, Ti, Ekina, Moy, Eten. Epon, An, Ide, Tanuma, Katabino, Kai, Menon, Ebaton, Uta, Epsi, Abatizo, in New York.
Okay. Translation.
And I did not know him, but the one sending me, or the one who sent me.
Yes, the one who sent me, having sent me.
Baptized in water. That one said to me, upon whom, upon whomsoever you might see the Spirit descending and remaining upon him, the Spirit descending and remaining upon him, this is the one baptizing in Spirit Holy.
Good. Okay. Real good. Any questions there about the constructions and so forth? Okay. First, that Adain there again is that pluperfect form from Oida. So, and I did not know him, but Hopemsas meh, the one having sent me, aorist participle, to baptize, baptizein. So, here's your complementary infinitive there to complete the idea, having sent me to baptize. So, we're getting quite a mixture of verb forms here. Aorist participle followed by an infinitive, and then in hudate modifying. How you're baptizing. Ekenos mo epen ephon on ides. There's that particle on there that giving that whosoever type of an idea. But whosoever you might see, ides subjunctive form. Whosoever you might see, the Spirit descending and remaining. So we've got compound participle there. Katabainon and menon, both neuter. Accusative part as well. See, you might see, yeah, the same thing. Accusative participle. Upon him, this is the one baptizing in Spirit Holy. Holy Spirit. Okay, questions, anyone? Go ahead.
I just don't know
if I understand it. Whosoever
from
F. Okay, F. Hon. Upon whom. And then the on here is where the whosoever comes. It's from that fact that you're using a subjunctive and using this hypothetical type of thing. That's where it comes from. So actually the hon is just who, upon whom, and then upon whom, and then on here is that kind of an untranslatable. That's what's giving it that sense. Yeah. So that's why you'd say whomsoever, upon whomsoever you might see. Okay. And you could probably just say upon whom you might see, but to be in step with King James English, you know, you, whomsoever. Okay. Yeah, it was in the section of the subjunctive, and subjunctive in the clauses, I think.
270.
270? Okay. Yeah. Indefinite relative clauses where you're you're talking about anybody who fit this category. Hotan and so forth, you'll see. Hotan, whenever. So, just putting that particle on in there, we'll do that for you. It's hard to translate that word other than in clause relationships like that. Greg, did you have a question too?
Yeah, I was just wondering, about the thing that would be present and infinitive.
Which one now?
Baptizon.
Yeah, it's a present infinitive.
Going with the heiress, the one sending me to baptize.
Yes.
So I guess what they're just looking at is strictly the aspect here.
Right.
I'm wondering if, I guess just in the reason it's present is so that it's not a single baptism, or it's an ongoing baptism and he's doing lots of baptism.
Okay. Yes, the one having sent me to baptize, yeah, the infinitive form, baptizane, that particular form itself is present infinitive, so it's probably dealing with more of a progressive aspect. And then hopemsesme, that's an aorist participle, so that's indicating action antecedent of the action main verb. So having sent me, he sent me to baptize, and that was kind of a progressive thing. It was going to be not just to baptize one individual at one time, but to be baptizing. So you could translate the one having sent me to be baptizing, one having commissioned me already to be baptizing. Okay, anyone else? A lot of information in just these verb forms and the relationships between them. So it's worth it. Yeah, they do. See, now you're finding out that all that we've been studying all semester is not in vain. You know, you're having to employ.
Giving us all this irregular.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, he's giving you what you need in order to deal with the New Testament. So, and they're all showing up. Just about every grammatical rule we've learned so far, we've already encountered in the prologue of John. Okay, verse 34. Who's up next? Price.
Kago. Eroaka, Kai, Neraju, Reka, Koki, Kuto, Esin, O, Kiwai, Tu, Kehu.
Okay, get some perfect verb forms there.
I don't know what Eroaka means, but it probably seems like I said it.
Yeah, he-oraka, he-oraka. It's from hora'o, it means to see, and it's a perfect form. So it's first person singular perfect. Yeah, I saw.
And
I have seen, you might say. I have seen. I have seen and
I have witnessed.
Have witnessed, yeah, that's good. This is a perfect form also from.
Well,
okay, yeah, here's an instance where, remember, you've got an option for hoti. It's either going to be because or it's going to be that. And in this case, you'll have it that because I have witnessed the following thing. The whole thing now is functioning as a constituent part of the previous clause, and therefore you'll translate it as that. I have witnessed that.
This is the Son of God.
Yes, that this is the Son of God. Okay, that's good. We'll try to point those out as we go on hoti, just to, you know, to remind us. When do you translate that? When do you translate it because?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in a sense he has. He says, I have seen and I have borne witness. It's really emphasizing the fact that he knows of a certainty and he has that present knowledge. Now, he's seen it in the past. It doesn't necessarily. that he's still seeing it directly, but he has seen it and he has come to a certain position as a result of that. Doesn't deny the fact that he may not be, you know, he may be still seeing it too. Have borne witness. He may continue to be bearing witness, but the idea is that he's done it in the past and he has a committed result, as it were, to this point. Up to this point, you might say.
I was just perfect as something happened in the past and it's still affecting the thing happening in a sense of in the present. But the way it keeps coming, I mean, mm-hmm. got it wrong. It's sort of like what happened in the past is just affecting the present.
Yes.
Not so much that it's still in.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily involve that it's still happening right now. It's just that something happened in the past and you are bearing the present result of it. Now, it may still be happening. You kind of have to clean that from the rest of the context. A person may have, for example, with knowing, if you know something, you came into the knowledge of it in the past and you still have the knowledge of it. So with some verbs in some context, the action may still be going on. That may be part of why the confusion is, because you've probably seen some examples where it's pretty clear that the action was still going on. In other cases, the action may not be still going on at all, but the result of the action is going on. So technically, the perfect is really denoting a past action with a present result, you know, a continuing result. And then the action itself may still be going on too, but that's not the point of the perfect form.
Well, my confusion was I was saying both really right here.
Mm-hmm.
He has seen,
yes.
but he can't keep seeing it, but still he's witnessing now of it.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
like... You see both kinds of things, right?
Yeah, I think the sense of this, I have seen and I have borne witness up to this time. You know, I have been bearing witness in the past, and I'm still bearing witness right now, and I'm living with the result of that witness and the testimony that's said abroad and the commitment that I've made and so forth as a result of that. So here's a case in which the action is probably still going on. He didn't just do it one time. So, but that doesn't necessarily always follow just from a perfect form. It may have been something that happened in the past. But the result is still with us. So, you know, like if you say, for example, I have defeated the enemy or something. After battle's all over, you know, Israel, you know, the captain of Israel could say, we have defeated the enemy. Well, it doesn't mean that they're defeating them right at that present moment, but they have defeated them and they have the present result of that victory. Okay, Mark.
Why is smooth breathing on the Alpha in
Chicago? Oh, let's see. I think that probably is just a... let's see if they put it in all of those forms. I don't think it's a smooth breathing. I think it's just a indicator of a... It's like an apostrophe. Yeah, it indicates a contraction. Because see, what we had was chi plus ego. And they put it over the vowel where the contraction occurred. So it's just an indicator of contraction. Okay, they may have borrowed it from the ego, I don't know, you know, just, in other words, when you had two vowels contracted like that, you might be using to indicate that there was a word that started here with a vowel. That may have been the connection they had. I'm just speculating on that, but I've usually seen it. What's that?
I haven't noticed that another contraction.
Some of them you may not see. This one, I don't know if the book ever said anything about contractions to any great extent.
The other contractions were vowel contractions.
This is two words. See, when you have, sometimes you have a contraction with just vowel changes or something, or endings added on and combining and so forth. But when you
see that, I think don't like when they take fe and the s out of it. You see that after the
To show something's missing, they'll often do that too.
Same with
you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I was trying to find a statement in here, but I don't think this book really covers that. I think in Dana and Matthew we may take a look at some of that just to familiarize us with the system. And of course the texts will vary too, perhaps, on some of this too. That may be part of why he doesn't make mention of it. Okay, let me check and see if UBS does the same thing. Yeah, they do. Okay. Verse 35, then, over here, Steve, I believe.
Yes.
Okay.
De aporion palan eiteke o ioannis kai ekton mateton autus duo. On tomorrow, again,
that a form of dysthymia?
Yes, it is, and it's a pluperfect form. Yeah, that's a real good one. Third person singular, pluperfect, active indicative of dysthymia.
Okay, yeah, John, that'd be the patron, had stood.
Yeah, had stood. Mm-hmm.
Stood, and out of the disciples of him, two.
Mm-hmm.
Of his disciples.
Yeah, and two. Yes, yeah, two out of his disciples, and two out of his disciples. In other words, the idea, yeah, John stood and two out of his disciples. So it's implied that they stood also. Yeah, okay.
And then
they
still use the third person.
Right. What they're doing there, I think, is they're saying John stood, comma, and then and two of his disciples stood, and then they might use it. If the verb were repeated, it would be in the plural for the two disciples. But the first one is just, the focus is on John, and then you've got an additional note that the other two were there too. So this wouldn't be quite a simple compound subject where you would expect a plural verb, but it'd be a singular verb with a singular subject, and then, in effect, another sentence being added on, and two of his disciples stood, without the verb being repeated. Okay, the use of a pluperfect is kind of interesting there, had stood, rather than just use an aorist there. So, but I think after after what follows and so forth, he's trying to say he had stood, and then... He's trying to show a sequence of time events there, because what he's talking about is the several stages of past time, because when he's going to go on, he's going to talk about having seen Jesus and so forth, and the seeing Jesus was after he had stood, so that's the reason for a pluperfect, is you're trying to go... remember, pluperfect is denoting something that happened in past time with a then-continuing result, and so the continuing result of his having stood is going to be seen in the next verse, okay, which is also in the past tense. All right, verse 36 then, John.
I am lepsas to Jesu perpetunte lege in eho amnos to Deo.
Okay.
And looking straight to Jesus.
Okay, it's an aorist participle there, so you might say in having looked.
Having looked straight to Jesus.
Okay.
Okay. He said... behold the Lamb of God.
Okay. This peripatunti is a participle. Oh, peripate means to walk about.
So,
I think you said straight or something like that. Looking straight at Jesus? Or were you deriving that just from blood?
No,
okay.
They give look straight at or...
Oh, I see. Okay.
Looking
at. Yeah, that's fine.
I just, for some reason, I skipped over that.
Yeah, he looked at Jesus walking about.
Walking about or walking instead.
Right. Yeah, that's just a dative masculine singular participle from parapateo. That's where the un comes from, is the contract verb. So parapatunti. So having and having looked to Jesus, looked at Jesus walking about, he is saying... Again, it's projecting you in the past and watching. You're seeing him say this, behold the Lamb of God. Okay. Any other questions there? Okay, verse 37, Jim.
Kai kusan koyu apetai aotu talunto kai aku deta soyeku.
Okay.
Then... two disciples heard him in there.
Heard him speaking. This means to follow. And they followed Schneeris. Yeah. Okay. And the two disciples heard him speaking and followed Jesus. And here's using this verb to follow kind of takes a dative object. Or you could think of it as he followed with reference to Jesus, you know. This is one of those verbs that we talked about that takes unusual. Yes?
Yeah, they followed him.
Yes, I think it is. It's let me double check it here. Yeah. No, akoluseo. It looks like it's probably deponent in the aorist, though. We've got an aorist passive form here. They give it as aorist active indicative. First aorist active indicative. Oh, no, this isn't an aorist passive form. This is just an active form, just because the theta is part of the stem. That's kind of a tricky. That's a tricky one. Especially when you have the eta sigma afterwards. It really looks like...
Okay.
But see, it's a contract verb, an eta, an epsilon type contract verb. Remember those epsilon type contract verbs? Before they get the sigma, they get an eta. And the theta is part of the stem. That's a tricky one. That's a real tricky one. Yeah, akoluseo is the verb form. And so that is not an aorist passive, in spite of what it looks like.
What kind of form
is it? It's a first aorist active indicative, third person plural. So the ending is really the only the on there, and that theta eta sigma is just happens to be the theta is part of the stem, the eta is because of the contract verb, the sigma is because of course of the aorist, and so it's just a first aorist. It's really quite an average, regular verb form, just happens to be because of the particular consonants and so forth in the verb and the fact that it's a contract verb that it comes out this way. That's a good one. Yes.
I want to ask a question about verse 36, Kai and Blepsa.
Mm-hmm.
You have, in 35, you've got John having stood there.
Yes.
And also his two disciples. And they say, and they saw Jesus. Is the antecedent to they saw, is that John and the disciples, or just the disciples, because it says, and two of his, out of two of his disciples. And then it says, and they saw. So does that cover both antecedents in the conjunction, both John and the two disciples, or is it just immediately the last part of
the conjunction? Well, there's nothing in the Greek that would prove it one way or the other. I think it would just be a matter of the syntax and just the flow. I think my first choice would be to take it as referring to John and the disciples, that part of it. Because then he goes on to say, then he goes on to limit it in verse 37. And the two disciples, you know, specifies them again, which would suggest that the previous was all of them, and now we see something different with the two disciples.
Well, that brings up another point.
Okay.
You have a series like that.
Yeah.
This and this and this and this.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say, and they.
Yeah.
Or the other, can that always embrace the whole, you could have a mile long, you know, series there, and this last thing could embrace the whole mess that way.
Yeah, it could, but it may not. It just depends on how they're
selected things out.
Yeah. Could be selected things out of it. Usually I think it would either be all of them or probably the last ones mentioned, one of the two. And you'd have the same problem in English or any of the languages. That's, you know, the grammar isn't gonna really be able to nail that down for you. You're gonna have to do that by context. And hopefully, most of the time, things are written in such a way that you avoid situations like that where there's ambiguity. And if the ambiguity is not resolved there, then it may be resolved by reading further on down and then, you know, trying to decide which one was being referred to. But the grammar wouldn't help you here because you're dealing with plural forms all along. Unless each one of those was a singular, you know, and then you had a plural there, you know you're encompassing more than the last one. But if they were all plurals and then the last was plural, you know, you'd have a problem there. It doesn't happen very often, and so maybe take some courage in that. But here we do have an instance where there could be an ambiguity about it, and the ambiguity isn't going to be resolved just from the Greek. It's going to have to be resolved from context and just some judgment about what's being said. Okay. Was there any other question there? Where are we at now? Verse 37? 38? Okay. Okay, good. Anything more on verse 37?
I was wondering one thing. I love you thought that the janitor.
Yes, right. Yeah, that's another thing I was trying to mention too, is that we've got akusan, and then hoidu o mathe tayo to laluntos. The autu there, you could take that of his two disciples, you know, his two disciples speaking. He heard his two disciples speaking, but that doesn't really fit it. It's the two disciples that heard him speaking. You see, it wouldn't even work because the two disciples is in the nominative. And so you have to have the two disciples. He heard the two disciples speaking. The two disciples heard him speaking, excuse me. And they heard him speaking. You've got a double object here, autu and laluntos, and in effect. But the laluntos can be considered a complementary participle here, giving the fuller idea. So they heard him speaking. And notice the autu is in the genitive. Remember, akuo is one of those verbs that takes a genitive object. So they heard him speaking. Good. I'm glad you reminded me that, because I wanted to make a comment about that, just to remind you and draw your attention to the fact that we see... You could consider that speaking a complementary participle to autu there, modifying him, or complementing the verbal idea, heard speaking, heard him speaking. That's an interesting construction. Two genitives that are in sort of object positions relative to heard. Okay. Verse 38 then, and Dan, I guess you're next.
God thanks Dan for him too, tied the abdominals of two acolytus, like a poi. See the data, point the a part of Tom Rabi, for legacy with their neomenos.
There's a good one. Yes, he did well. Okay.
No,
too many. Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah.
What is that?
Which one? The.
That their name.
Oh. Yeah, we get the word hermeneutics from it. It means it's got the idea of interpret, translate, that type of thing. They give translate here in the interlinear for it. It's got the idea of interpret or translated. From meta, and then, and you know, it's kind of interpret with, that type of thing. So, you know, it's the interpretation of something.
Okay. And that Jesus turned.
Okay, this is actually an aorist passive participle. So, having turned, something like that. Jesus having turned. It's a deponent verb, looks like.
Having turned and seen or viewed them. Following, said to them,
mm-hmm.
"What seeking? What are you looking for?"
Yes. What are you looking for? What are you seeking? Mm-hmm.
But they said, "Yeah." They said to him,
"Yes,
Rabbi." And then would that be the same being translated, teacher?
Yes. Which is being said, being translated, teacher or something. Yeah, which being right, there's a little bit redundant there. Which is being said, being translated. You know, the idea is which is being said in translation or something like that. When it's translated, which is being said when having been translated, teacher. Okay, in other words, this is the way we say it in Greek.
Where are you resting?
Yes, where are you resting, or where are you remaining? Where are you staying? Probably they're asking where he's, you know, where he's spending the night and so forth, who he's staying with, and so forth. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, that's a mouthful there. Any other questions there? Yes, Mark.
Hey, theopomenos, is that an aorist middle participle?
Theopomenos. Okay. Yes, aorist middle participle. From theaomai, again, that same verb. And...
So his looking upon him would have that middle
mm-hmm.
voice.
It sure appears to be. There can be a little question here about the fact because of the deponency of the verb. Mm-hmm. So one would have to check and see if they used active forms and so forth as well. It may just be. But even so, usually with a deponent verb, the reason it's deponent is it's got some sort of a middle sense to it. And I think that may be what's happening here. This viewing, you see, that may be the sense in which this verb is different from the other ones. It's because it's got this more of a self-interest type of an idea. You know, you're looking at it for your own benefit. You know, you're really looking at it intently. It's not just something you happen to see, but it's something you consciously are looking at and wanting to perceive about. So I think that sense could still be seen there, even if it's just because it's deponent. Usually, if something's deponent, there's a reason for it. In the syntax and the semantics, the meaning of it. But technically, it's a middle form participle, the aorist middle. And, well, there's that akolothuntas again, and that's it's a present active participle from akolutheo.
What
means to follow. And I don't see any breakdown of the thing, you know, I like to try to break things down into roots, and I don't see anything here. But here it's having viewed them following, he's saying to them, what are you seeking? So it looks like he's watching with interest, you know. Jesus is watching with interest and following. Okay, then verse 39. Is that the second bell? No, it wasn't. We still got some time. Eric? Okay.
He said to them, come and see.
Mm-hmm.
Then they came and saw where he remained abiding with. And beside him they remained of that day. And the hour was the tenth.
Okay. Good. There's an accusative tain himeron. It's one of those accusatives, those adverbial type accusatives that remained that day. Also, there's something interesting about this erchesta kai opsesta in terms of the fact that the erchesta is an imperative form from erchomai. Opsesta is a future form from horao. And so you might translate it literally. He says to them, come, imperative, and you will see. Come and you will see. So it's rather than saying come and see, it's come and you will see. Mm-hmm.
The future is not used, also
sometimes
as imperative.
Yeah, you can see that there's a certain kind of sense there. And in this, and for the Hebrew students, remember that you start with an imperative and then you continue with imperfects and you get the idea, do this so that this. It's the same kind of thing here. And it may be a Hebrewism. It may very well be. Come and you will see. And so there's, you know, there's an action, but the whole thing is kind of an imperative sense to it. But there's indicating a kind of a cause and effect here. You come and you will see. So, yes.
So the last part, the hour was at the tenth. Is there a special way to say that? Last part of the verse.
Yes, it was about, you know, as Decate. In other words, you might translate this. This was about the 12th hour, I think. That should be 12th, shouldn't it? No, that's Dodeca. Okay. It's about the 10th hour, I think you're right. Let me check here. Yeah, it's about the 10th, as the approximately. So it was approximately the 10th hour. They put that in there just to make it clear that they're not saying this is precisely the 10th hour. Okay. Any other question there? Observations?
What hour is the 10th hour?
It depends on whether you're going by Jewish. Tony, here you've been plunged into that. What would the 10th hour be? he's been wrestling with this the day that Christ was crucified and so forth.
I was saying around the 10th hour.
Yeah, what would be the, obviously the ninth hour?
This is about 6 a.m., doesn't it? About 4 o'clock.
Yeah. Ninth hour would be about 3 in the afternoon. 10th hour would be about 4 in the afternoon. Assuming we're going by Jewish time there.
My family started at 6, it would have been about 4.
Yeah.
Might be Roman time.
Yeah, that's the problem. If it's Roman time, it's different. Okay. We'll assume it's Jewish time. Okay. Oops. Tomorrow we'll take some time to review, and if you have any questions about the test and so forth, you can bring those tomorrow. We'll try to get that all squared away, and then we'll go back to translating for a while. Then maybe next week, we may take next week just to translate, or I'm debating whether to start getting into Dane and Matthew or not. I'll think about that. Wednesday. Yeah, next Wednesday.
I figured